coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I do believe Cole and I defeated the monster that lived inside of our computers, and now we have actual recording capabilities once again. I am Andrew Farmer, as always, with me, the host of the show, other than myself, the Jedi Cole Houston. Cole, you there?
Absolutely, and I certainly hope that this is the case. Otherwise, everything we just said didn't get recorded, and you're not going to hear it anyway. So it really isn't going to matter.
It won't. Does anything? I'm starting to get like a real existential. Cole and I have been fighting this battle with this, trying to get the ability to record back for about the past 2 weeks. And I really feel that we've achieved a level of existence that we have heretofore not had, where I'm not sure what's real and what isn't. And
I've spent the last several days just sort of reciting things I might have said on a podcast.
We've never actually recorded a podcast. I think that's really what we need to focus on, is the fact that this has all been in our minds, Legion style. None of this is
that's
real.
Right.
I don't even know if you're real, Cole. Are you real, or are you a manifestation?
I can't speak to that. It could go either way.
It really could. At any given moment, it could go either way. If we sound excited, it's because we've really been. I mean, a little peek behind the curtain. We've already recorded this show once and attempted to record it about 5 times. And has not yet happened. So tonight's the night,
yes,
baby.
If you'd like to hear half of a conversation, we might release it as a special, but don't count on that.
You can just fill in what you think you would have said in that. Just that's the whole point of the show. It's a conversation between, you know, all of your friends that hang out and talk about comic books. So now you really get to, this could be a really, we blew it, Cole. This could have been a really cool.
We actually did miss out on a great opportunity for something unique in podcasting.
Yes, the one-sided podcast.
It's like one of those choose-your-own-adventure books, but with no guidance.
It's
absolutely
only
absolutely zero guidance whatsoever. You're on your own, baby.
I believe the term you're looking for is Kafka-esque podcast that we recorded. But yes.
I always thought Kafka-esque had something to do with Raid!
That would have been a really good marketing campaign if they would have jumped all over that.
Yeah, they could have done that. Just the whole metamorphosis insecticide market was
It was saturated at that point. Oh, my God. All right. All right, so tonight, issue what, Cole? It's been a while.
Good night.
262, 263. It's one of the two.
It's bound to be, and I will have that answer very shortly.
Okay, well, whatever issue of Hey Kids Comics this might or might not be, were it real or not, if this actually gets released to the public, we are talking about the long-awaited Jessica Jones Season 2, also known as Hellcat Watch 2018. if you paid attention the last time that we didn't release a show,
we were already coming off of a hiatus. We were very anxious to return to a normal schedule.
Yes.
And then this.
Well, we hit a Howard Hughes level of insanity somewhere in the last couple of weeks, but I did want to mention that we talked about this on the last show that we recorded, that we had a celebrity like on our Instagram page for the post about this show, which was
two weeks ago. Now I feel like we failed.
Justin Swain. So Justin Swain liked the post about this. So we have to make Justin. And who is Justin Swain, you might ask? How dare you? How dare you not know?
Especially if you're listening to this particular issue of the show.
He played Detective Bailey on Luke Cage. You assholes. Why don't you get in touch with our fan base and know that that Justin Swain is a beautiful human being. So
this is for you, Justin.
This is the Justin Swain episode of Hey Kids Comics. Swaincast 2018 is in full effect. Hashtag Swaincast. If you're at all listening, if we're not screaming into the void right now, make sure that you tag everything, hashtag Swaincast. All right. So yes, Jessica Jones season two, feels good to say that again and talk about
absolutely.
It.
Hey Kids Comics 263, keeping up with the Joneses.
Nice. Okay. So breathing now, I'm back in it. All right.
AKA Swaincast
2018. We'll see what he likes next, because everything he likes is going to be Swaincast. So, coming off of the heels of the season one of Jessica Jones, this is a different show this time around. This is a different – there's a different feel to this show. And, you know, since our initial recording, which was 2 weeks ago, I've talked to some people about the show and about their complaints, and I think that I have some answers to those questions when the time comes, Cole. But why don't you go ahead and get us started? What road do you want to take us on? What lantern? What lighthouse are you veering towards?
Let's approach this from the standpoint of the you have this situation we ran into when we first tried to rip this. And that was a kind of a rift in our feelings about season of Jessica Jones. While I found it quite enjoyable, I also personally it seemed a bit disjointed.
Okay.
I don't know if that's because every episode was written and directed by someone different.
Yeah.
But it just seemed like a lot of times it had that kind of ebb and flow of emotional, nobody could seem to finally settle on what exactly it was they wanted. I thought I was watching something on the WB.
Oh,
no, it was not.
I'm gonna punch you.
That was mean. That was mean.
Even though it wasn't, because as you might know, I'm a staunch proponent of the WB and all of the fine WB programming. And we actually have an episode coming up based on a WB show. If I can get off of my ass and spend my 2 weeks of forced hiatus doing something other than not watching Riverdale.
Yes, indeed. We really, that's one that needs to be tackled, because that's a whole different story. Right now, we're coming off of Jessica Jones season two. I think possibly, I can't back this up, but the material may have had no prior basis. A lot of, like, the Marvel movies are often loosely based on storylines that exist so that the fanboys can piss and moan about the fact that they got it all wrong. The first season of Jessica Jones, of course, was based on the miniseries Alias.
Right.
And which, you know, put Jessica Jones right smack in the middle of a conflict with the Purple Man, otherwise known as Kilgrave on the show, because they weren't going to go full purple.
Still wish they would have just called him the Purple Man.
Oh yeah, just at some point, in the way that that guy in the that detective in Blue Velvet was the Yellow Man.
Yeah,
he was wearing that century
as a nickname. It could have just
been exactly, because it was like he was called or referred to as the Yellow Man because he wore that Century 21 jacket.
Right, he wore purple all the time. You could have called him Purple Man.
Exactly,
would have been fine. But you know, who are we? Who are we?
It doesn't have to be mauve pigment, but there you go. We didn't get that, but let's talk a bit about what we did get, and that was I think this is the chapter in the character's story where we finally get some closure, so it doesn't become the opening for the first three seasons of Arrow.
I mean, that's valid. That's valid. I agree with that, and much too. It's not often, and it should be more often, honestly, if you're in the either the podcast playbook or any kind of media's playbook, that Cole and I have an actual difference of opinion.
Yes, it's
we should have more drama on this show than what we do have, but Cole and I do have a difference of opinion. I prefer this season to the first season, and I know that goes against what I feel should be as well, but I felt that the first season, while again, comic book accurate. And Cole, you, by the way, you are correct. This season, while Jessica's mother does appear in the comic, she is not this character even a little bit. By the way, now that we've said that, if you haven't seen Jessica Jones season 2 and you're listening to this, I would strongly suggest going back listening to it before I spoil anything else, like the major plot points in this season of Jessica Jones.
It is always almost an after with us that, oh, by the way, don't listen if you haven't seen.
I just blew the entire season.
Yeah, it will be like, you know, well into the third act of the show, and like this show has any sort of structure, but
not anymore, baby.
Realize suddenly, oh, hey, you know what? You know, would have been really nice for people who haven't seen the show yet and maybe just got too into it to realize not listening until you've seen the show.
That's right. That's right. But I enjoyed season 2 a lot, very much so, because I think that we did need that, unlike the comic book, right? You can in the comic book, you can go forever without any kind of family closure. Believe me, everybody's done it. It's a comic book. I still don't you wait a million years to find out who anybody's family is. You know, I think we waited something like 40 years before we got John Jones's real family backstory. like real fleshed out, other than just, hey, they're all dead, I'm the last one. But in
did I remind you I'm the last one? Did I mention that this week?
In a TV show, I like this, that is more, Jessica Jones functions very well beside the Marvel Universe. We talked about it when we were recording this first time, and we also, I think it bears mentioning that what Jessica Jones does very well, and what this season did for me very well, was establish a world in which, and we talk about it all the time, comic book characters exist. So, superhero-powered people, now they exist. Now we have to deal with what that looks like in everyday life. And I think that's the thing I really like about this season, is we're seeing it develop in everyday life now. Jessica Jones is the powered private detective. People come to her for that reason. Trish Walker has built a very successful radio empire around the idea of powered people. We have powered people doctors appearing in this, powered people lawyers appearing in this. Like, what does it look like? What does that world building look like? And I think that this went a really long way to build that world. They're in the open now. How do you deal with it?
Oh, exactly. And it acknowledges, in a way, a lot of things in superhero universes don't. I think one of the things this did well was wholeheartedly acknowledge this whole new world without anybody questioning. You know, one of the things that's really annoying is where you have a situation that a character or characters exist within this universe where anything's possible, and they're surprised by the things that happen.
Yes.
It's like a great example of that was just abysmal failure of what could have been something amazing, which was the Inhumans.
Oh, God, yeah.
And there were so many points where people were like, oh, why would, you know, like a probe on the moon being attacked by something on the moon? Go be silly, you silly bee.
It looks like okay, a hoof. That's unbelievable.
That's impossible. There's something wrong with the equipment, or you're insane in the membrane. Or I'm insane and I've completely forgotten I live in a world where there have been 45 major and 3,000 minor superhero and supervillain instances.
Matter of fact, that's the reason I have a job. But yeah, you're a wackadoo for feeling that way.
Oh, aren't we nutty? So, yeah, this one does a good job through some in very subtle ways of, you know, hire Jessica Jones because she's the super investigator.
Right, right.
And not only will she, you know, find your cheating spouse, she can destroy.
God, there were some great scenes around that in this. The opening scene in the entire season 2 was just great.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, she functions very well beside the Marvel Universe. It doesn't need the bombast. It doesn't need the pageantry of even a Luke Cage, even a certainly not a Daredevil, but even, you know, even a Luke Cage or an Iron Fist. It doesn't need it because that's not what the show is. You know, the show is noir. The show is, you know, the comic is noir. The show is noir.
Well, also one of the things that's kind of cool there is you have, it's often referred to the Netflix series characters as sort of being the street level heroes. We often talk about that ourselves here on the show, is like, these are your Marvel street level heroes. And right. I think in so many ways, this brought your street level hero into the world where they're on the street level with all the regular people. And in so many ways, Jessica Jones is the street level hero, or the street level hero's hero, because she's powered, but just wants to have a normal or semi-normal job.
Yeah.
She just wants to be an investigator. You know, great if in the course of pursuing that, you know, she can, like, punch holes in walls or knock doors down with her bare fists, but she doesn't need to go out there and just, like, beat her way into crime fighting.
Yeah, she doesn't want the costume. She doesn't feel a draw or a need to, for, you know, matter of fact, she's fighting the idea of heroics.
Yes.
You know, that's not her job. There are other people out there who want to do it. I mean, her ex-boyfriend's doing it over in Harlem. Like, why am I responsible for this?
And not only is it not her job, it is so not her.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even not her thing. It's just not her. That's not what she does. You know, it's that reluctance to take up the mantle of the hero.
But I think that that's why this season is so important, is we find out why that is. You know, and I think that that's an overlooked part of this. There's a dichotomy dynamic between her and Patsy in this season that I think is very, very important. But also I think the idea that, okay, so the whole first season of the show, she didn't want to be the hero. You know, she made it very evident that she didn't want to. Matter of fact, she wasn't. You know, what she did with the Purple Man was because of the fact that she didn't have a choice and something had to be done. You know, she's that super reluctant hero. We don't know why she's not willing to put herself out there. Now we find out why in this season.
Well, I think a lot of it is that there's this tremendous amount of baggage runs around with. She's got, you know, the loss of her family, which we later find out are in storage. and then, you know, once they're forced upon her, then she's really particular about nobody trotting on her brother or her dad. I'm not sure which. I think it was her brother. you know, you didn't give that much of a rat's ass about those remains for the last 17 years.
So that's a problem for you.
A little bit. I mean, and I guess it's being with her drinking away those blues kind of attitude to everything, but in many ways that sort of underscored the waffling emotional roller coaster that all of the characters were on, regardless of their level of sanity. Everyone was just like, you know, that they loved each other so much they hated each other, wanted to not do the things that they didn't want to not do. just you never knew which way they were going to jump from episode to episode, and that's kind of what I was getting at with the idea of it of being sort of like some of these angst-ridden dramas that used to be the order of the day. I never got to the point where I was so annoyed I was going to walk away from it. It just seemed like it was a show in search of its story, even though it did have some compelling subplots. Not the least of which is the one you mentioned with, you know, Trish wanting to get some of that sweet, sweet superpower action, because she kind of grew up in a weird way in Jessica's shadow that she imposed on herself, while Jessica grew up in her shadow as just sort of the, you know, extra kid when mom, you know, for stage door mom to have to contend with while she was busy grooming her real daughter for greater things.
Right, right. And I think that you hit on it where you know, we finally get a moment of abject, you know, like what, you know, geek out moment, if Rick Gutierrez doesn't mind me stealing, when we see Patsy Walker finally starting to develop some superpowers, some feline based powers, which one thing I don't understand and I do not like, and I will put this on the table now, is the idea that all powers have to come from science in this Netflix universe.
Science, yeah. Especially because when it belongs to a greater universe that doesn't have that dictate.
Right. There's no dictum saying everything has to be scientific. You know, and I'm not even saying it has to be – I'm not even saying it has to be magic or something like that. I'm saying in the comics, Patsy Walker finds a suit that belonged to – I think it was the first Hellcat who later – becomes Greer Grant. Yeah, so Greer Grant Nelson, which doesn't she become Tigra? Am I out of my mind?
I believe you may be on the right track there. Greer Grant sounds correct for Tigra.
So she finds a suit, and the suit now later in her career, she gets mystical powers from her husband, David Hellstrom, the son of Satan. Tear it up? Put the son of Satan in.
The thing about it is, if there was anywhere the son of Satan character could walk into the Marvel Universe, it was in the Netflix universe.
I agree with that.
Because that's the safe place to be. Damon Hellstrom is not inherently marketable in the greater,
the nicest way I've ever heard that put.
Yeah. I'm amazed because as a kid, I actually owned two issues of, I believe it was Marvel Showcase, featuring Son of Satan.
Yeah, it's big as life, right?
On the Hey Kid spinner rack at 7-Eleven, Son of Satan.
Just bright as day, just right there.
Wouldn't, in this flaming motif, who wouldn't want to own that? But it's just like, you know, here's this guy with a pentagram basically branded into his chest with his little spit curl horns and his, you know, and the really ironic thing about Damon Hellstrom moved back into Jessica Jones is, you know, for somebody who's involved with, you know, the Hellfire and all, being a ginger, he's got to go through a lot of sunscreen.
And having those two spit curls, that can't help either.
No, it's a lose-lose, but at any rate,
that was a good aside. I'm glad that we got to talk about that.
Flaming pitchforks aside, we, or as they say in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, a hay fork. You've got, I have to agree with you that it seems like Netflix is mired in this, and I'm hoping that as the Marvel Universe continues to expand, they will allow things like magic and aliens and crap to come on board.
Magic and aliens and crap.
Yeah.
So speaking of magic and aliens and crap, let's talk about some of the things we noticed about this season that maybe people didn't pick up on or should. You know, we can obviously start with Hellcat. You know, she's getting some powers. We see her get the super soldier.
She got like this super soldier breathalyzer going on there. And it's like, you know, Pat's, don't you realize there's only – that thing has so much capacity. You can't go down to Walgreens and pick up another.
You can't get it refilled. You don't have a prescription for it. But, yeah, she had the full treatment from Mangala over there there towards the end. And while not exhibiting full superhero-based powers yet, we did see some acts of – accidental agility that I believe are going to play in later, much to my happiness, because again,
she's going to become increasingly cat-like. When we did the first recording, I did posit that maybe the third season will be sort of all about the Hellcat, but I softened on that. You were in disagreement on that, and I really began to see your point of view that she does not need to be the sole catalyst, that she needs another season to go from, you know, trying to foster the idea of us being a superhero in Jessica to having this sort of, you know, superhero envy. She's got like the power envy going on.
Well, it's because Jessica has something that she doesn't.
Yeah, and then plus by this season especially, you begin to see what a fractured psyche she has. That she's gone from, you know, child star to teen star to young adult star, each in their own unique incarnations. So you get this serious sort of like dark Miley Cyrus vibe going on. Which I loved the flashback to that sort of middle period.
Yeah.
That these chapters in her life and the I Want Your Cray Cray was
God, it's so good. I posted it to our page, by the way. I don't know if you saw that, the full video. Yeah.
I wanted some of that Cray Cray.
I did not. I did not want that Cray Cray.
It was just such a compelling argument for Cray Cray.
I mean, really, if you ever needed an argument for more Cray Cray... Yeah. Patsy's got you covered.
She did. And
uncovered, as the case might be.
And there were things that, like, the humanizing of her mother trying to, engineer the proposal, the wedding proposal with the field reporter guy. And, the character got to be even more fully fleshed out while simultaneously fleshing out more of Jessica herself. But once the mom reveal comes in...
Is that the part you had a problem with?
Yeah, because it suddenly becomes, you know, my mom's a killer. She has to be stopped, except she's my mom, and I should nurture her and help her escape and aid and abet her, but yet...
What was the horrible, horrible asshole thing you said the last time we recorded about her mom's head? What was...
Oh, dear Lord. See, it's the thing about it is that... It is a travesty. That episode was lost. As I recall, there were multiple points at which the things that will fly out of my brain without any preparation or recollection.
Yes.
Caught you on several, just repeatedly throughout the recording.
Yeah, you got me good on a couple of them. I'll give you that.
And unfortunately, it didn't. Turns into Roy Batty in final act. You know, everything I said is gone like tears.
Jesus.
Except that those tears were preserved in most episodes. So.
That's true.
Unfortunately, it's a tears and rain sort of thing, so I'm not really sure what did I say.
Well, what about our favorite? Odd. Very odd. And I don't know where they pulled this out of. I don't know where they pulled this particular character to use as the example of...
I know where you're headed here.
Yeah, and the more I thought about this... Now, we'll talk about the character and the homage. Cole, why don't you get us into talking about Whizzer a little bit?
Yeah, well, the thing about it is when this dumpy little guy comes in and starts to talk about... being really fast, and then invokes the name the Whizzer, and I'm just like, you know, doing the sort of you don't know why I'm doing this grab over to Catherine, and she's
little
sort of
dance.
Giving me that. Yeah, I'm like, it's the Whizzer, God did it. And well, of course, the Whizzer is a character that goes way back to the World War II group, the All Winners Squad.
Yeah, and in the show, the Whizzer is meek. I thought it was a cool affectation, regardless of how accurate it was to the comics, that the Whizzer's powers were fear triggers, which I thought was awesome. But, in the comic, he wasn't that way. He was very much the staunch, stalwart defender of the U.S. During wartime.
Oh, well, he was all hero.
He was all hero, yeah.
You know, as you would expect. And this Whizzer has the power, but it only comes to him. And what I loved about that was it gives him that sort of invisible kid or invisible boy from Mystery Men.
Yes.
It gives him that sort of like, oh, yeah, sure, you have superpowers. I'm sure they'll show up. And then when they do, it's sort of like, oh, wow.
Oh, you do have them. Oh, okay. Now we can talk. Yeah, no, it was absolutely like that. It was a cool idea to have him in the show. I just don't know. He's a very odd choice for that, you know, being a World War II era of, that no one had seen or heard of from in a really long time, having him as the guy was pretty bizarre, I thought. And we get to, and again, him being an artifact of the experimentation, I thought was really strange, but him being used as a plot device to forward the idea that this is a real conspiracy, on top of the fact that we did have a reappearance of Nuke, and everybody thought that this was going to be the villain. This was going to be the guy. We set it up last season. This season, Nuke goes crazy because of the red and the blue pills that he was being given. And now he's insane. Now he's off the rails. Now he's going to torture the life of Jessica Jones and her family, which didn't happen. He was actually trying to be stand up. He was trying to be a defender. He was trying to defend Patsy and to a lesser extent Jessica, and that didn't work out so well for him. But overall, I thought it was good to bring him back, even as it were a red herring of sorts. So I thought that was good too. Another thing that they brought into this, and it's the first time, and we talked about this at length in the last recording, but it's the first time in the MCU by name that they talk about the Raft. And the Raft is very, very important to Jessica Jones, to Luke Cage, to this strange iteration of the Defenders, which is almost the new Avengers, if you really dig into it, to Iron Fist, to all of these guys who more or less came together during the beginning of the new Avengers run. And a lot of ways I feel like they're using Jessica Drew and Jessica Jones interchangeably in story arcs. Now, being the Bendis darlings that both of them are, it doesn't surprise me that they would be willing to do that. But in the opening pages of the new Avengers comic that came out, oh God, I don't know when, I'm holding it again. I cradle it at night against myself for warmth and comfort. You have a scene where essentially the setup to the new Avengers is there's a breakout on the Raft. The Raft is finally mentioned. The Raft is the super maximum security prison in which they keep all of the big bads when they are captured, whether it be by Spider-Man or by Cap or by whoever. But there is a scene with a breakout that is phenomenal. And in one of the scenes of the breakouts, you get Purple Man. You get Purple Man standing in the courtyard while this giant melee, this huge battle goes down between whatever superheroes they could round up and the Denizens of the Raft as they come pouring out. And one of them was Kilgrave, attempting to mind control Luke Cage until Luke Cage realizes that he's been drugged beyond comprehension. Now, the difference is he has straight mind control powers in the comics versus this weird pheromone thing that he had in the show, which I'm not object to a pheromone thing, but he has that, and Luke realizes that he can't be mind controls, and he goes off on him talking about how he threatened his life, his wife, and his kids. In the comics, Luke Cage's wife is Jessica Jones, and his kids are Jessica Jones's kids. So Kilgrave plays a huge part in the Raft, which they finally mention. I'm very excited because guess what? That's where the Avengers are in the MCU, is all tied up on the Raft, and nobody's said the words yet, but you see it at the end of Civil War. So I'm real excited that the Raft finally got name dropped in something.
Because the nice thing is, with bringing something like the Raft in, those familiar with the cinematic universe have a frame of reference. More familiar with just the comic universe itself, you still have something of a reference. So it's not like it's just completely coming out of the clear blue, but it does give you that little foothold, that connection to the rest of the Marvel Universe cinematic. And in many ways, it brings you closer to that cinematic universe than a lot of other things have in the past. That's one of the great things about the Netflix, is they sort of subtly let you in that, no, we're not going to pretend like this is its own thing, which is the most foolish thing you could do. I think we talked about that in the past. And it seems like with each new Netflix series, they're kind of bringing you even more and more in, and The Raft was a great way to do that.
I want to talk about one of the more archaic references that I don't think in our initial recording we ever got around to talking about. I could be wrong. There was a reference to... So Stan Lee made an appearance on a bus ad in this season of Jessica Jones. Did you happen to catch what he was shilling on that bus ad by chance?
I did not. I just registered that he was there and forgot to go back and look.
He was shilling for a company called Forbush and Associates, Cole.
Oh, perfect.
So
yes, and that's something those steeped in Marvel would have a familiarity with. And if you don't, you're not, you know, you haven't necessarily lost any, but oh wow. That's
a super deep cut. It is a super deep Marvel cut. For those of you that don't know, Forbush Man was a, for lack of a better term, a parody character that appeared in, I want to say, what did he appear?
Well, there was it What The?
Yes, it was What The. It was absolutely
Forbush Man actually
not Brand X.
That's right, not Brand X. No.
Yeah, X. Weird, weird, deep cut to Forbush Man.
More like the Red Union suit, and a blue cape, and then had a what was it like?
It's a pot on his
cooking pot. Yeah, yeah. It's his mask or his helmet.
Really deep, bizarre cut to throw in here that had to be solely for the fans.
No, that was definitely, to say the least.
But really cool character. We've often talked about the parody comics that, you know, that we love are out there. We talked about Fred Himbeck. We've talked about Not Brand X. We've talked about the Legion of Substitute Superheroes. This falls firmly into that category. And I was really excited that they threw that in there just as a... Hey guys, we're definitely thinking about you when we are making these shows, which I felt was exactly what that was. So that was kind of cool.
Absolutely. And I guess we need to touch upon the whole dynamic of Jessica's mom, who is apparently just a nutcase, but the most lovable, murderous nutcase in the world.
I guess, yeah.
Because, you know, Professor Hipster and
even Jessica, Michael Gross from Family yes. Ties.
They just, you know, all fall under her spell in some strange and inexplicable way.
Yeah, they do. And again, you know, they say that, you know, because she was in the same, and even if you watch season one, you know that she was in the same car accident that Jessica was. Assumed dead, right? Assumed to be dead. We find out that there's this killer on the loose killing these metahumans. You know, she got Nuke. This killer got Nuke. This killer got Whizzer. You know, and various other metahumans. And it turns out to be her mom. Mom's still alive. You know, it was one of those situations where the doctor was like, you know, you're not trapped in here with, you know, we aren't, you know, she's not trapped in here with us. We're trapped in here with her type of situations. Very, very much a weird family dynamic that they develop kind of out of left field. But again, you know, if there was anything that was CW or I guess WB, let's go back even further and call it WBE about this, it was that mom came out of left field. It was that Mom showed up out of nowhere, but I think it was important to telling Jessica's story that we understand why Jessica's so effed up.
Yes, and we also, like I'd said before, we need to give that chapter of her life some closure. We need to be done with that so she can have, can begin to develop as a character and be something more than just, oh, did I mention my parents died tragically?
Oh, you mean Batman?
Yeah, except Batman occasionally would shut his flap about it.
Oh, she's definitely inducted into the Marthas in this season.
Oh, yeah.
In a big way. By the way, I was inducted about 3 weeks ago into the Marthas officially. I could not be happier. I'm paying my dues on time. I've really adapted to this, you know, Martha's lag. I drive the little cars in the parades.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, you were Andy at AllCon, which is one of the reasons we were gone for quite a while. Not this, but AllCon in general. But we did officially induct Andrew into the Martha's, and was given one of the Superman Batman vinyl capes. There are only a few left.
They are hot. Is that part of the initiation? Is that they're so warm?
It is. It's the, you get the, it's like a Turkish bath.
AllCon this year was definitely like a Turkish bath.
You get the serious back sweats wearing those things.
You will not want to wampa if you are wearing one of those Martha capes, for sure.
No, it would be nigh impossible to effective wampa.
Effectively wampa.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know if anyone can affect it. I think if anybody could do it, we came the closest, Cole.
That was probably nearest approximation. It's sort of like the Kama Sutra, which was apparently a book about punctuation marks having sex.
C-O-M-M-A. Sutra, yeah. At that. Yeah, of course. Of course. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get back to this. We're going to have to start wrapping it up here pretty soon. But there was one thing I wanted to talk about, and it falls back into the... I wanted to talk about Hogarth a little bit.
Oh, yes. Because there were... You have these three parallel...
Yeah, yes. Talk about that. Yes.
Three or four parallel story arcs, because you had this sort of... you know, the convenient arrival of a new landlord who could produce any, even the most complex of official documents in the United States could be fashioned in his apartment in his spare time.
Yeah, he was the worst version of Cypher from the New Mutants. But, and you thought the worst version of Cypher from the New Mutants was Cypher from the New Mutants. You were wrong.
Well, that certainly cleared that up. Yeah, but apparently all you need is a cheesy Epson printer and some sort of, like, acetate printing material, and you can make passports and all kinds of stuff. The thing about it is with forging documents in the modern world is actually forging their presence in databases.
Right.
So apparently the Marvel Universe is incredibly modern, except a lot of aspects of very important identity and confirmation.
I'm starting to get a feeling you had a real problem with a lot of this season of...
There were a lot of things. You know, I'm willing to forgive, like, jumping into the East River and yanking the head off a dead guy over... the... I both love and hate my psychopathic murder mom and
my superpowered sometimes saves people in car accidents and sometimes snaps the neck of a superpowered guy in a warehouse mom.
Getting the soles peeled off of your flats while you're trying to stop a bus is he's got a long way to go toward forgiveness for snapping a bunch of necks in your career, including the ex-boyfriend.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who, you know, you had to throw in that layer of tragedy.
I mean, it was the worst bus and truck company version of Mommy Dearest I've ever seen.
Well, yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah, just, you know, Pink Floyd was going to write a song about it or something, but it's just...
Damn it, Cole. You know how bad seltzer water hurts coming out of your nose, son of a bitch?
I'm surprised that you dare to consume any liquids.
I don't have a choice. I got to pick my shots, though. Yeah. I gotta pick my shots.
It's like, he's not going to be able to hang a joke on son of a bitch. Comes out one
Pink
nose.
Floyd? Like, I heard, like, okay, I'm safe for a second. Nope.
He's going to make some just, you know, 500-mile cast.
Lovecraftian arcane reference.
Yeah, it's like,
that,
you know, like fly fishing with 1,000 foot of line and snapping up those sweet, sweet rainbow trout, but
son of a bitch!
Did you take another drink?
No, I didn't. I was thinking about it, and I'm like, I should probably wait this one out.
Oh, God. Catherine asks, do you have to drink every time I say trout? It's like one of those drinking games.
It is. Well, Catherine, what Catherine doesn't realize is that over the past 8 years, you've subliminally planted for me to drink whenever you say trout so that you can set up your goddamn next joke so that I don't have a leg to stand on.
I probably have this like sort of inflection that makes you feel like, okay, he's winding down.
Yeah, like, oh, okay.
Then
okay.
I can just, you know, flip it real quick when you're least expected.
Flip that son of a bitch on me real quick.
I will switch gears faster than Jessica Jones's mom.
Or Jerry Hogarth, speaking of.
Oh, yeah, we didn't get... Yes, you have the Jessica Jones story, and you have her mom's story. You have this weird, like, angry rival investigator guy that's a minor plot.
Yeah, where did he go?
He just kind of comes and goes whenever it's convenient. But, yeah, you bring Hogarth back into the mix, and that, in many ways, she had one of the most compelling storylines, but it also had suffered, again, I think that each writer brought their own little twist. Like, one whole episode, you get Kilgrave visiting her, like, you know, it's like Morgan's visions in The Walking Dead all of a sudden.
It's like a Bob Cratchit. Situation.
It's like, you know, Jessica, I'm wearing the chain I forged in life. No, that doesn't make any sense. I don't have any chains anyway. Just me, just dressed up here looking all prim and Dr. Hooley, and I'm just coming to bug you, and I'll only... Dr. Hooley, yes. And
Dr. Hooley. I really hope that he does all of my prostate exams from now on.
Yeah, you would hope. He's got the soft touch.
He really does. You know, I like a Hooley with the soft
But, you know, and then I'll just go away like so many midichlorians.
Disappear into the night and you'll never hear from me again until you have a crisis of conscience.
So for the rest of up to this point in the season and for the rest of the season, just be a non-entity. Bye. but you know, you got the great concept with Hogarth dying, and you know, she's hell bent to fight for her legacy against her dicky partners, and apparently, I guess the real scam in being an investigator is they're investigating things that anyone could find out on their own for free.
Yeah, well, sure, that is definitely the scam.
At the level at which they just sort of like, I'm going to open my laptop and maybe I'll, let's see. Jessica got like all of a billable hour out of helping Hogarth. Because, I mean, like 10 minutes out of every 5 days she'd spend pursuing this really desperate need to get some dirt on Hogarth's partners. And then she leaves it to her perpetually fired associate to save the day. But, you know, the concept of the various stages that Hogarth goes through, the mostly denial, Catherine pointed out. But,
sure.
But you know, the half a six-pack of whores that kind of got a little tenuous on that note. Cause it just seemed like they exaggerated the idea. Like, it's like any good writing roulette. Like, well, where'd you leave off? Well, I had Hogarth in her desperation. She goes and picks up a prostitute. Great, I'll have her have two more when we get back. What? I just need to get three. But the whole idea of someone gaming her because of her association with Jessica and her foreknowledge of, you know, the situation of bitchy nurse, it really played in very well and made that character more believable in her sort of seeming about face on being so just dispassionate about people.
Well, I enjoyed the Hogarth arc, but I enjoyed it again because I thought what this season of Jessica Jones did very well was something that they don't think that they could do with Iron Fist, and something that they didn't do. They built a very small window, and they didn't touch on any of the... When we talk about Batman, often we talk about the fact that Gotham is its own character in Batman.
Yeah.
Well, what this did was build the street-level Marvel universe in ways that I don't think have ever been established before. And in Luke Cage, you didn't get an acknowledgement that you have a superhero walking amongst you. In Daredevil, you certainly didn't, because his identity is shrouded in mystery. In Iron Fist, Lord only knows. Like, everyone has powers and does stuff, but they're all shrouded.
And they all just kind of come and go.
Yeah, in this, you get the idea, like I was saying earlier, that you have... And we see it with Hogarth, right? We see the idea, like you were saying, that because of her knowledge of powered beings, which everybody knows they're there, you live in New York.
Yeah, it's chock-a-block full. You can't walk out the door without tripping over a cape.
That's exactly right. So why wouldn't there be shystery, people taking advantage of people saying that they have the power to heal when they don't, taking your money and splitting down?
Like when Patsy winds up in the hospital, there's mention of shyster doctors.
Yes.
Or not even real medical professionals, just guys saying, oh, yeah, I've got this super soldier serum. Give me $100 and we'll get you hooked up.
Right, exactly.
And so it acknowledges that there are superhero world crimes going on that are the petty superhero world crimes, not like the Vulture and his crew going and knocking off what's the name of the organization that goes in damage control.
Yes.
You know, you have all these different levels at which a whole world of criminal activity emerges because everything has changed.
And that's what this – you asked me why I liked this season. That's why. Because it isn't superhero versus supervillain. It's this is what the world is now. If they do have superpowers, they're out there jacking with people, you know, because it's the easy way to make money.
Exactly.
If they don't have superpowers, there's nothing to stop them from pretending that they do.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I mean, theoretically, an interesting take on that would be to have a character who is, you know, an amateur magician or a decent enough magician, you know, just being able to come up with a few little tricks and illusions to make it seem like he's super powered to knock over banks and stuff. Like, oh, that's just a taste of my power.
Yeah, just instill you with fear.
Exactly, because you never know. Maybe the guy's a shyster. Maybe he can really blow my head up. I don't want to take that risk. Here's the money.
Exactly. And I think that's why I liked this season so much, is because it was ground level. It was absolutely, this is kind of what things would be like if this was really happening. You would have a superpowered, you know, somebody that specializes in superhuman law. You would have somebody that specializes in superhuman medicine. You would also have people that had TV shows for things like, or TV commercials for things like Zizol, but for superpowers. Like, do you have super psoriasis?
Like, exactly.
Like, those are things that would legitimately be on around, you know? Like, Botox for your migraines, but with superpowers now. Like, that's stuff that would absolutely be out there.
Well, and also, going back to the wizard, which, again, that was just a stroke of brilliance, is that initially there is that question, is this guy even what he says he is? Because of exactly that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. He sets up the idea in a brilliant sort of way. He foreshadows the con artists. Because you have the people who are like, here's somebody with powers who's doubted, and you have someone without powers who's just taken it.
Right. Right. And, you know, and what I was saying was, if you watch The Defenders, there is a large chunk of the show that is predicated on the idea that these four individuals with superpowers are being held up in a police office because either A, nobody believes they are what they say they are, when you have now established that these people are absolutely the only one that it makes sense is friggin' Daredevil, because he wears a mask. You know, and he's an upstanding member of society until, you know, midnight when he puts on his leather daddy costume and goes out and fights crime. That you've got a ninja invasion that every cop in New York knows is happening. You've got this stable of superpowered people, and you're like, nope, it's too dangerous for you guys to go out there.
Yeah.
No! Like, come on!
This is what we do.
So, yeah, that's... You know, well, there's a difference between condoning vigilante justice and not condoning vigilante justice and just flat not believing that we've got to hide our powers. No,
that's
you don't
right.
at this point, because Iron Man just flew down the street with Spider-Man riding in a little saddle on his back chasing a giant alien invasion.
Exactly, yeah. When Thanos comes and walks and strides the Earth, all bets are off. But, you know, we're never in one of these things in an hour, which we're probably exceeding by now.
We're right
are able to,
it, yeah.
Yeah, are able to touch on everything we want to talk about. But I'd like to real quick bring in somebody who had a lot of great stuff to say about Black Panther when we did Wakanda Round, and with whom I shared the experience of watching the first season, like three or four or too many episodes at a time when we really needed to get to sleep, had to force ourselves to wait the next day to round out the season. So if you don't mind, I'm going to pass Catherine the mic here and let her impart a little bit of wisdom.
Wisdom? I just want to talk about it.
Hi!
Catherine always imparts wisdom. Hello, Catherine. Welcome to A-Kids Comics.
Hi!
Once again,
I came in late. I was out procuring sustenance for the tribe.
Sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's necessary.
I came home with groceries and fried chicken.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Talking about Jessica Jones, I did come in time to hear you guys going on about some of the shortfalls, and I got to thinking, while I'm really happy that they'll making Jessica Jones, I was disappointed, I have to say. I watched every single one of them, wouldn't miss a thing, but I was underwhelmed at when you guys brought up the making the fake documents, because like in you know since the years started with twos, no one takes documents at their face value.
Yeah, I mean that's valid.
A document is something that this is the conversation you have about any document now. Oh, I don't have it on me. That's okay. We can just look up your number. Okay.
That's right.
that's documents, okay? Not back in time. Where a crinkled a piece of paper that was expensive, stained in a certain way, and crinkled on the edge was really special. So I got to thinking about other things that kind of bothered me, and it's my number one thing was these shows can't seem to do Doctor Thingies very well, and this was one of the worst example of Doctor Thingies is you take a machine that was probably initially designed to fill a set of test tubes at a lab and put pointy things on the end of it, and all of a sudden it's a mass injector for a body part that isn't that shape, but who cares? To mass inject something into some muscle mass, some nerve endings, and possibly some jutting piece of bone all at the same time, it never ceases to amaze me how the medical end of these things just always fall flat. The physics of it and stuff like that. So
yeah.
it's just almost comical. I really, really wanted to follow the storyline of the lawyer, but again, it just all was a really long drawn out dilemma that tied up its ends too quickly. It's like, oh, they took all my stuff. Oh, there's my stuff. All right. Apparently the bald person at the pawn shop also had good connections of movers who could take it all back, clean it up, and put it back in place. And then, you know, she gets a gun. Oh, spoiler alert. She gets a gun, and then, you know, psychs out the nurse gal, and lo and behold, the nurse gal, you know, runs upstairs in front of a, you know, a nice open window, no shades, you know, in that place, and just shoots the guy. And it's like no, these are con artists. This woman, even if she bought the lawyer's spiel,
yeah,
she would have. What you do is you take the gun and you use it to keep the guy at bay so you can you know, secure him and then make him write you checks in exchange for living another day. You know, why kill the golden goose? It's like, you've got a bunch of money, I don't know where it is. Bang. It's like, no. that's like the last thing you do. So anyway, I'm probably frighteningly pragmatic when it comes to murder, but
well, that's the subtitle of the show. Anyway, Jessica Jones season 2, frighteningly pragmatic when it comes to murder.
Yeah. Oh, you killed it. Oh, all right, fine. You know, you killed somebody else. Oh, that's good. But I still want. No, I don't. I don't want a relationship. It was very. Oh, this makes me cry. It was very DC.
It was very DC.
Very DC.
I don't know. How did you feel? Where do you feel it fell in with the? I thought that the juxtaposition of Jessica not wanting the responsibility that came along with the powers that she had, with the idea that Trish was willing to do anything to get the powers because she didn't have them without purpose, right? Like there was no sense of responsibility outside of, I want to have these because it's something I don't have and I want to fight crime. Do you think that there was anything there in that dynamic? Or do you just think it was...
Actually, you might disagree, but I think it was really the only storyline that panned out well. Because it was... It started out, the way I saw it, it started out that she happened across this, and it's not something that she realized. You know, I'm sure growing up with Jessica, she always fantasized about wanting superpowers. Who doesn't?
Right.
But the actual idea that it might be possible seems to gradually sink in with the character. The character is trying to mentally deal with what she wants and what she can possibly have, and to the point where she's oblivious, obviously, to the fact that it's not a magic inhaler. It's going to eventually run out of juice, and she doesn't get a refill. I really actually enjoyed that storyline and found it a whole lot more plausible than the what was supposed to be some sort of angst-ridden relationship between Jessica and her mom, which just didn't work from episode to episode. It had no continuity and growth like the other one, the inhaler, did.
Yeah.
I thought, the guy who tried to sniper him, I that was just so tacked on.
I don't know where that guy came from or what general, like, I guess I get the purpose that he served, you know?
Yeah.
But it was constructed drama. It was constructed conflict that I just didn't. It just didn't do it for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, did you and Cole say that they had it had more? The episodes had more than one writer throughout the.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. They did. Oh,
so it was like a round table.
more or less, yeah. And a lot of these shows have that.
Okay.
They just, I think a lot of them had a little more continuity.
Yeah. Well, I think that explains a lot. Because it's, you know, you leave the kitchen and you come back and all of a sudden there's bell peppers in the soup and you're like, damn, what am I going to do with these?
You're like, did anybody put more chili powder in this? Does anybody remember?
That's right. So that explains why stuff appeared out of nowhere for no apparent reason and was took a mile to develop in 1 second to get rid of.
Just write it out. I didn't like that. Just write it out. Oh yeah.
Well, anyway, I won't drag on and fuss about it. But I hope they do better next time, or at least the writers like talk about it to each other. That'd be nice.
There you go.
But I don't want to. Still, even with all its flaws, Iron Fist made me cry.
So this was better than Iron Fist.
This was better than Iron Fist.
Okay. Okay. I don't know if I agree with that, but I will take that in consideration.
The second I met Iron Fist, I just needed him to die.
Wow.
Like, please. You're the whiniest ass. Anakin Skywalker. I would rather be on a long car trip with him than Iron Fist.
Wow.
It's like, let's drive to Toronto. You get Anakin Skywalker or Iron Fist.
Jeez. I don't know if I agree with either of those, but okay, I'll take that journey with you, sure. Oh, all right. Well, put the old man back on. We're gonna wrap this thing up. Thank you, Catherine. As always, salient as ever when we aren't. We appreciate that.
Hugs. Love y'all. Bye bye.
Love you.
Having Anakin Rand.
That's it. I don't know who I would rather be stuck in a car ride with, but our choices are Anakin or Iron Fist, apparently.
You only get two, yeah.
That's it. It's like Spider-Man said. It's not what Spider-Man said.
It doesn't sound like what you'd say. But I think the only other thing I would have to say in closing is three little words. Rampant parole violations.
I'm glad you remembered that from the last one.
That was going to bug me if forgotten. And, you know, when you're on parole, even with the most forgiving of detectives on the case, kicking the door out of the squad car, there just is a level of so, you know, there goes her bourbon budget.
That's right. But, you're going back to jail, whether you like it or not.
Exactly. I hope you like your withdrawal symptoms because they don't serve scotch in the stale cell. And the only other thing, you know, I'm willing to believe that somebody can super science a little girl into a superhero who is inexplicably not invulnerable but has the strength to, like, say, kick police car doors off or bust down entire walls without breaking every bone in her body because she's not invulnerable. But that's either here or there. It's bad, bad, bad police forensics. If you think for a moment the guy with a giant crowbar to the neck welt, I mean, even if she cleaned up the house and nobody thought, hey, I wonder if there's any blood in the house, they're not going to luminol a place for a suicide. But regardless of how artfully she tossed his corpse off the roof, there's still physical evidence of a prior death.
That's true. That's true.
Unless she dropped him off the roof into one of those, like, you know, a car crusher.
He just lands straight into a car crusher.
Yeah, just happened to have thrown himself into one of those. Then it's something. I'll buy that. But
oh god! All right, I'm pulling the plug on this, Cole.
Yeah, we need to let this guy go. So
Yep. Well,
I think we've sufficiently kept up with the Joneses, and while we haven't even attempted to recreate the original, I think we've given some good quality work and given ourselves enough time, not by design, to recover from having lost some really great material.
Well, I'm just glad that we were able to get back in the saddle and record something and put it and get it in the can and get it out so that next week we can release. What are we doing next week? Do you remember what we're doing next week? It's been a while.
It has been. I think our original plan before the whole Jessica Jones thing came into play was to do an episode on the lives and times of Catwoman. But even that might get bumped.
Uh-oh.
Because I think that you had an idea.
You want to go that
exploration,
route?
We can jump into one or the other, and I will leave yours secret in case you want to
we'll
give
keep
yourself
it quiet.
A little,
it's either going to be Catwoman, which would be time sensitive and very nice since the engagement announcement, by the way.
Oh, that's right.
She's finally tying the knot with old with old Bruce Wayne. So
yeah, Kyle Wayne wedding vows to be heard.
That's. You're gonna, Celine. Did you get a hold of Taco Bell?
That's right.
I told you I want this wedding to be
catered by fourth meal.
It's the only thing I eat when I have my costume on. I don't. Why you can't ever?
How do you keep that physique? You're eating Taco Bell all the time. Lettuce. It's the lettuce.
It's the lettuce. Taco Bell's the healthiest of the fast foods. That's why they win the fast food war. Ask Brainiac. I don't. I was taking that. Yeah. All right, Cole, why don't you plug us up?
Now.
Plug us up. We'll get the hell out of here.
All right,
let these fine people get
course,
back to their evening.
Hey, Kids Comics, coming to you from fourthmeal.com. You can write to us at fourthmeal@yahoo.com. I'm sorry. We're going to get in serious trouble. Taco Bell, God forbid, has maintained that website. But for all your fourth meal needs, come to JediCole.com for Hey, Kids Comics. And coming very soon, the return of the pre-recorded The Rancor Pit. And speaking of the Rancor Pit, be sure and watch on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central on DallasOnAir.com, the Rancor Pit live.
Yeah, boy.
And on the first Sunday of every month, my co-host Eddie Medina and his wife Colleen bring us Figments, the Heck Unexplained yeah. Mysteries podcast in its new live incarnation. There was a very special episode that was actually produced on Easter Sunday that unfortunately became a lost episode due to technical difficulties, but it's coming back. We'll produce it, a very special Figments episode. And then, of course, the third Sunday of every month, Figments is from 9:30 to 10:30, right before the Rancor Pit on the first Sunday. Third Sunday, Isle of Toys, featuring myself. And this coming Sunday, none other than Andrew Farmer will be either Skyping him in for a special look at Where Do We Go from Hat's Lab. And then we also, the following month.
First time hearing about it.
Yeah, sure. And next month in May, my dad will be joining me for Age of 10 to talk about
the 10 toys
of yesteryear.
That's exciting. That's super cool.
And, of course, the Hey Kids Comics Facebook page at the Jedi Cole for the Twitter, if I get back to tweeting. And of course, Carvel Crunchies and Fourth Meal.
And don't forget HK Comics Show for Instagram and Twitter for this show in particular. Thank you guys for your patience. In waiting this out and hanging out with us while we got all this worked out.
And for how long it took me to get episodes preceded this one onto the JCU site and up on the back issue bins. Getting back in this full swing of things because AllCon has not become the all-consuming portion of my life that it was for so long.
It's hard to bounce back from AllCon, but...
Especially AllCon with Andrew Farmer in attendance and on stage with me, which was amazing.
Once again, I'm telling you, whoever you are, whatever you decide to do, be careful when you wampa. It really can throw things out of whack, out of alignment. both, you know, cosmically and physically, you know, there's a chakra situation there.
And if you buy the Hulk, Incredible Hulk sticky icky at the dollar store, do not throw it onto a ceiling that has crown molding.
Might be the most popular thing that happened all of AllCon, was Scott Horn and I trying to unhorn the using a Harry Potter wand, some tripods, some duct tape, and Cole Houston at one point. Trying to unsticky the icky from Hulk on the ceiling.
And please bear in mind that never happened. Okay, well.
we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, in the interest of AllCon returning next year, that never happened.
That's right.
So we will bid you adieu and be back here next week with more comic book goodies. One of two choices that we have. Of the, I think it's on the order of 60 episodes that are already plotted.
I'm sure it is. And another 300 that live in our brains.
That's right.
All right.
Funny story arc coming soon.
Yes, it is. All right, so bye, Collect. Enjoy your comics. We'll talk to you next week. Good night, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.